Ekholm left side, skates in. Spins the puck down for Rocco Grimaldi behind the net. Right circle, looking for a shot and a score! Nick Bonino! And the Predators take a 1-0 lead. A 5-on-5 goal scored after 7 minutes and 50 seconds. Here now is Chychrun with the try, deflected high. Stepan with a shot, stopped there, and then Saros made another stop on Clayton Keller.
Oh, how about juice? That's just 3 fantastic saves. Then he follows it up with about 3 more after that. I'm not sure what the shot clock says, but that was some spectacular goaltending.
In on the left wing side, Victor Arvidsson, Forsberg comes on, tried to slip the puck behind the defense. Instead, he lost it, and a shot taken from the right circle by Ryan Johansson. It is 2-0 Nashville. Now Sissons in the corner, off for Yarncroke, and the score. This time, the score comes from the right side of Darcy Kuemper, and the Predators have themselves a 3-0 lead. Drop for Stepan. Tries to go across in front, broken up there. And Johansson sends it out for Arvidsson. Speeding in right wing side. The shot, he scored! Victor Arvidsson on the power play. And the Predators have taken a 4-0 lead. Yannick Weber tried to clear it down. That was blocked by Stepan. And now we have less than a minute to play. Breaking in! Clayton Keller with a backhander to beat UC Saros and end the shutout spell with 56.3 to go.
Oh, boy. That happened quick.
Did it ever. And now they come back and make it 4-2. And the Predators have hung on here to even the series at a victory apiece as they take game number 2, 4-2 over the Arizona Coyotes.
An important response yesterday in Game 2 for the Nashville Predators. A big 4-2 win against the Arizona Coyotes to even the series 1-1. Welcome into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson, taking you through this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, big one yesterday for the Preds. You know, we talked yesterday about the pressure on this group. I thought they responded really well yesterday in Game 2.
I did too, although I think that the Coyotes really were taking it to them early. You know, there wasn't carryover from that third period, which I didn't really buy that anyway. But I thought that UC Saros really allowed them to flip it around. And I swear, you how many times you see the huge save like that, like he had on Keller?
Yep.
And then the other end, you get kind of a – I mean, Forsberg almost slipped through there, and then he lost it. But then, all of a sudden, boom, Johansson's got it in the back of the net. And right then, you kind of knew. Just like you knew in the first period of Game 1. Ah, this is their game.
Yeah.
And from there, I thought they really dominated, you know, especially with the lead, dominated the second period and a lot of the third. And it was like, okay, this is what this series should be. There's a clearly better team here in the series. Couple late mistakes, but that was a overall pretty impressive performance.
Yeah, we talked yesterday about, you know, the importance of getting that first goal. And I thought that really was important yesterday because, like you said, Joe, Arizona came out. I mean, they took a penalty 5 seconds in the game. 5 seconds, Philip Forsberg is in the box. And I was sitting there, I was putting cabinets together yesterday as I was watching this game because I, you know, Joe, that I'm a great multitasker. I can do things physically with my labor and watch hockey at the same time.
I'm very impressed.
I've learned that through this quarantine. But 5 seconds into the game, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. That's
a pace for 300 penalties in the game. They're on a pace.
You ever want to see, get me to turn off a hockey game? Let's get on pace for 300 penalties in a game. That's what it'll probably take for me to turn off. But, you know, having said that, you know, the power play for Arizona, they come out. The Preds do a good job of killing it off. But Arizona was controlling play. So you don't get that first goal, that game could turn out differently. And the shot by Bonino was actually kind of funny because Rocco made a great play behind the net.
Yes.
Made a pass out to him. But Bonino lost the puck. Like he just lost it. And when he shot it, he wasn't even looking at the net.
The no-look wrister, man.
And it ended up being, I mean, it was a perfect shot. Just a perfect shot. And to get that first goal – and then the sequence you talked about with Saros making the saves, made 3 saves on that play, the biggest one on Clayton Keller. Johansson comes back down the other way and scores that goal. That was huge. That's just a huge swing right there. And to be honest with you, I didn't think the Preds played all that well in the first period.
And then they came out in the second and third periods playing with that lead and really totally dominated. I know they gave up the two at the end. The first one with just a brutal play by Jared Tenorti. But I thought they dominated that game in the second and third periods and really didn't take their foot off the gas.
Yeah, it's too bad that Saros couldn't get the shutout there. Yeah. That's the tough part. I mean, I don't think there's any carryover to today from that, just like there wasn't carryover from the third period to the first period of yesterday. And by the way, this comes up again as we listen to the outstanding call of Pete Weber. The only guy in the world who says Saros.
I know.
But I feel like we're
He's
all
probably
wrong.
Right.
I feel like we're all wrong. We've got to get this nailed down, man.
I don't even know if I could switch now. Like it's just so ingrained in my head. I would try.
Right.
It's
and
like
the thing is that Saros or Saros would say to everybody, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he doesn't
You're
care.
Good. No, that's fine.
It's like the Preds used to have a player, Marty Erat, who I think now is most famous for being the guy who got traded for Philip Forsberg, which that's
yes.
fine. But I think at one point for like 2 months after he had been here for about 9 years, looked around at training camp and was like, yeah, it's actually Erat, not Erat. It's Erat. So I think people tried to switch for about a week, and he finally just looked around one day. He's like, you know what? Erat's fine. It's cool.
Yeah,
I'm cool with it. Whatever.
You know, some people get like Joe. There's a quarterback for Notre Dame in the 70s, Joe Theismann.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, I'm going to go Joe Theismann. And it rhymes with Heisman, and he's still known as Joe Theismann. And Tony Dorsett played for Johnny Majors at Pittsburgh. And then somewhere along the way, that
Dorsett,
became Dorsett.
Baby.
So, I mean, you can change it. But I feel like it's still early enough in Saros' tenure that, you know, we should all be able to come to an agreement on that.
Yeah, like, do we think that Brett Favre was always Brett Favre, or was he Brett Favre at one point?
I remember, like, when he was drafted, there was a lot of – and I had, like, yeah, what is that? Favre, just like in
Brett
something
Favre.
About Mary. Favre, yeah.
Farva. But yeah, it was just a great performance yesterday from Saros, and we'll get to him more a little bit here in just a second. Got contributions from Yarncroke as well with a goal. Arvidsson blisters one in the third period, and I don't know why, Joe, but I saw that pass from Johansson spring Arvidsson forward there, and they were on the power play at the time. It's a 2-on-1 rush with him and Matt Duchene, and as soon as he wound up, I was like, this is going in. It's been so long.
That's his spot.
We've seen him score that goal 50 times in his career, that exact same play. But we hadn't seen it a whole lot this year. That to me, that's a perfect example of the burst and the speed that we're talking about. He was controlling the rush. He probably could have looked off the defender and sent it over to Duchene. Made the right call, obviously, to shoot that puck, and he just buried that one. Just a great shot.
Yeah, from that on the rush – with using that speed, the right circle, that is it's amazing. I'd love to know his accuracy rate on that, you know, with that kind of separation. And even in the postseason, it seems like most of his playoff goals of his career have been that.
Yeah.
Basically that play. So, yeah, and it's something we didn't see this year because he wasn't getting that separation. You know, I mean, the speed that he has back now just creates opportunities that weren't there for him before, even in the playoffs when people are, you know, trying to be physical with him and limit him.
Now, I went on a big rant Monday and a little bit yesterday about not getting to the middle of the ice offensively. I thought they did a better job of that yesterday in game two. I mean, Yarncroke scores a goal right from the slot on a rebound play of his own shot. Johansson gets, I'll count that to the middle of the ice. Even though I thought that was a pretty horrible play by Kemper to come out, play that puck, and then he should have made that save. But it is what it is. That's what happens. When you get to the net, put the puck on the net, sometimes good things happen. Bonino, where he's supposed to be, I thought they did a much better job yesterday. Even the Turris line, like Duchene and Turris had a couple of really good looks from the slot yesterday. I know they didn't score, but I was encouraged by the way they played yesterday too. I thought both offensively and then the big point defensively of what we were talking about, Ryan Ellis, to me, I think gets full marks yesterday. That compete level, battle level was raised really high. He and Taylor Hall got into it 4 or 5 times yesterday.
That was hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, Ellis, I think, deserves a lot of credit for raising that level up a little bit yesterday.
Yeah. No, I mean, Ellis, I think, was one of the big offenders in game one, and he was excellent in game two. And, yeah, the Taylor Hall thing. I mean, so, I mean, I didn't really see what happened before it, but he blasts Ellis, knocks him over. Then they're going back, and he's still talking to Ellis. And Ellis is kind of like, what? You know, yeah. Leave me alone. And, I mean, Taylor Hall just drops those gloves. It's like, really? I mean, a playoff game. I mean, did Ellis do something that wasn't caught on camera or something?
I don't know.
I don't know what happened there. That was weird.
Well, and the funny part is, like, they're friends. They used to play together in Windsor, like, together on the same junior team. And they're sitting out there chucking knuckles at each other.
This could be like an old, you know, some old, who
old
knows?
Practice rivalry.
Practice.
Maybe they didn't like each other. I'd assume they're
fought
friends.
Fought over a girlfriend long ago. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe that's a bad assumption on my part. I mean, I know they were teammates in Windsor.
Yeah, sometimes
they didn't
like
each other.
That means you don't like someone. Yeah. But then, I mean, obviously it wasn't intentional later, but, I mean, a lot of stick in Ellis's face gets him a double minor and blood all over the place. But, yeah, Ellis was really good. I thought that we finally saw – after just a real brief glimpse of it in game one, a lot more in game two of that second line. It's always great to get a goal from your, you know, from your fourth line.
Yep.
And then look, Nick Bonino, I mean, I wrote about Nick Bonino today at theathletic.com because I think Nick Bonino does get, we were just talking about the other day about, is this team soft?
Yeah.
And look, it's still, it's a finesse team and that's what it's going to be until it's done playing this year. But Bonino is the guy, probably the first guy you'd talk about. I mean, you can talk about like an Ekholm and some other people on this team, but you probably would start with Bonino when you say, no, this team isn't soft across the board. I mean, look at what this guy does. He had that goal, but I thought some of the blocked shots and just some of the plays he made on the penalty kill,
yeah.
he really does set the tone for this team on playing gritty playoff hockey.
I think he had 5 block shots yesterday in game two, 21 as a team. So nice commitment to blocking shots. And look, you don't be doing that too much because that means you don't have the puck a lot. But I did think there was a commitment to that yesterday from the Predators. That's what you have to do this time of year in the playoffs. When we come back, we're going to talk about who should start for the Predators in game three in goal. It's going to be an interesting decision for the Preds and John Hines. Also, take your phone calls, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You know, I would say this about both goalies. When you talk about two fantastic people, just they care about each other, they care about the team. They're very professional. They push each other. They have each other's back. It's a unique situation. And I think, you know, the organization has done a great job of bringing in two guys like that. And it helps in this situation that, you know, Juice is playing well. He's a young guy. And, you know, we all know how good a player Pecs is and what he's been able to accomplish and what he's going to be able to accomplish as he continues to move forward in his career. It certainly helps a guy like Juice to have that relationship and support and guidance. And you know, it's a unique, unique situation and really fortunate to have that as a coach. When we talked about evaluating the goalies and then going game by game. So it's, you know, something that we haven't made a decision for tomorrow at this point. I think it's important, like everything, that you let this one digest a little bit. We go back, have a meal, we talk, we rewatch the video, and then we'll make a decision. You know, that's usually how we go about it, particularly in the playoff series.
That was Preds head coach John Hines after the game yesterday, a 4-2 win for the Predators against the Arizona Coyotes, talking about a big decision that he has to make today. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. And Joe, we've known this was going to be a topic of conversation all week, especially after you lose game one. We had a big segment on it yesterday in terms of what do you do with the goaltending situation if you win in game two. Well, the Predators won in game two, and now they've got a decision to make heading into the second half of a back-to-back for game three. And I don't know about you, Joe, but I've kind of wavered back and forth on this. I think coming into the series, I just assumed that Pekka was probably going to get game three. I just assumed that regardless of what happens, it's a back-to-back. Pekka's probably going to get game three. The more that I watch what's going on around the league and the more that I watch and kind of wrestle with what happened in game two,
I didn't think Saros was tested overly much in game two, other than the first period where he made some big saves. I didn't think he worked that hard in terms of his workload. I would go back with Saros in game three. I think he's playing well enough where he's almost forcing you to go back with him in game three. That's just my thoughts.
Yeah, I would too. And actually, C-Mace, Chris Mason, I thought made great points yesterday about this, because workload really is part of this. And like he said, a day of practice, you're out there doing more than like you would do in a game.
Yeah.
So, and Saros made the point, because he was asked after the game, Saros/Saros, was asked after the game about the idea of playing it. He's like, yeah, no problem.
I'll be okay.
Yeah, I'm good. But he basically made the point that, they're not traveling. Just go back to your room, rest up. I mean, that does matter. There's a little less just wear on someone if you're in this bubble situation than if it was, because obviously what this would, well, I guess they obviously it wouldn't be a back-to-back, but they'd be going to Arizona right now. It wouldn't be a back-to-back. That's why it's just, you're conditioned in hockey to think back-to-back. Okay, you're switching goalies. But that's because in an 82-game regular season, why wouldn't you? I mean, if you have a viable second option, I mean, you just, like, you got to think for the long haul. You're thinking for the short haul right now, and your best chance to beat these guys today. And I don't see how you decide, yeah, let's try something else at the most important position. So I think it will be and should be Saros.
I agree. And look, am I going to be shocked if they roll out there today and it's Pekka? Probably not. I don't think I'd be shocked by it. But I would just think, by the tone of what John Hines was talking about with Saros after the game, watching how well he played. His age has got to be a factor in this, too. He's 25. I mean, this is much different than if Pekka starts this series. He's 37 years old, plays well in games one and two, but he's 37 years old. I mean, I think you do have to factor in the age of these goalies. Saros is 25 years old. From a physical standpoint, he's probably going to be able to handle this. Now, it's going to be easy if he does start game three and they go out and just get their doors blown off to second-guess that decision, regardless of whether or not it's his fault. It's going to be easy to second-guess that decision. But I just think going with Saros today is the right move. I know that I had a couple people yesterday bring up like the numbers that say, goalies who start two games in a row, those numbers on the second day aren't good. And they're not. But those numbers also don't really factor in what's going on here. Usually you're talking about travel. Usually you're talking about the wear and tear of an 82-game season. Like, they've been off for 5 months. There's no, like, wearing Saros into the ground. He's been playing since Sunday. So, all that said, I kind of think it's an easy decision today to go back with him.
Yeah. I do, too. And, I think I know, like, our buddy Martell's pushing Pekka all the way.
He's starting.
And he's going to go in there tomorrow.
He tried to backpedal yesterday. I saw you call him out on that.
Yeah, don't try it. And then he tried to use a Simpsons gif. That's Adam Vingan territory.
Yeah, we can't be disrespecting Vingan.
Yeah, I mean, Vingan has used every Simpsons gif 3 times at least. I think the second guessing – whatever happens, if they lose today, whatever he does in goal, we'll be second guessed.
Yes.
There's no doubt about that. But I just think, unless there's information we don't know, which is possible, I mean, they're going to do everything they can to figure out how Saros is feeling. If there's any concern about, coming back 24 hours later or 22 hours later and playing. If there's not information we don't have right now about Saros' physical condition, I really think it's kind of a no-brainer. And again, when you talk about the idea of a long run, I still believe both these guys will matter. But right now, I mean, Saros to me has played 5 straight really good periods.
Yeah.
He probably should have stopped that last shot. They scored 2 goals in the last minute. He probably should have had the last one.
Yeah.
That's probably the worst goal he's allowed. But again, it's like.
But even that one's from the slot.
Like, yeah. It's like, really, guys? You got a minute left,
Just finish this thing off.
Give the guy his shutout.
Yeah.
But 5 straight periods where, to me, and really, again, I said it after game one, I'll say it again, really impressive to me, periods two and three of that first game after what happened to him in the first period. And then that saves he made in the first period yesterday, think about how different that game could have been. Like, yeah, you said, that game could have been totally different if he does not absolutely rob Keller, turning into all of a sudden, you know, Johansson making it 2-0. I think you're talking about a guy on a roll right now, and I wouldn't want to mess with that if I were John Hines.
I wouldn't either. Now, I guess the other side of that argument, and I agree with you, Joe, if they continue to move on in the playoffs, you're going to need Pekka at some point. Like, you just are, with the way that these playoffs, I think, are going to be formatted. Could you be worried about, you know, if Pekka doesn't play now, he's probably not going to play in this series, would be my guess. Like, if he's not playing today, unless Saros, like, gets injured, knock on wood, he's probably not going to be playing in this series. Do you worry about him going too long without playing at that point? And then if you do need him, he's just rusty.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. But this is where, and this was a case for Pekka to start this series, he has been great after long breaks, and I think that probably has to speak some to just being older and just having that rest. I mean, he's got 89 starts. He's a pro. He's been through so much in this game. To me, if it's game five against St. Louis, I think he'll be ready. You know, I hear what you're saying, but you have to beat these guys. What gives you the best chance today, right now, to beat Arizona? I think it's hard to make the case that it's him unless, again, you have some information about Saros that you're a little like, and he needs a couple days, and you give him Wednesday and Thursday, bring him back Friday. Okay.
Yeah.
If there's nothing like that, I you have to think super today, short term, and that's that. And just have confidence that if and when Rene is called, he'll be ready.
The other side of this is Arizona, and what are they going to do in goal? Because, quite frankly, I think Darcy Kuemper has been average, probably at best, in this series. I thought the Johansson goal he gave up yesterday was awful. I didn't think that was a great shot by Johansson, but it leaked through. I mean, even the Arvidsson goal, even though Arvidsson hammered the puck, that's a shot on the rush from the circles. When you're on, you want your goalie to make that save. So I wonder, you know, what is Arizona going to do? Because remember, in the third period yesterday, the start of the third period, Antti Raanta was gone. He was on the bench. He started the game for the Coyotes, and then he was gone. I have no clue what happened. All of a sudden, he's unfit to play.
Rick Tocchet said something in warmups.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, he's unfit to play. Aiden Hill comes in, who is a young and up-and-coming goaltender for the Coyotes. He's actually played against the Predators before, and I think almost shut him out. But I doubt they're going to go with Aiden Hill today just because of his inexperience. So if they go back with Kuemper, how does he handle the second half of a back-to-back? Because I don't think he's been all that good in this series so far.
Well, no, it's tough for them because I think Raanta definitely could be the call here. But now he tweaks something or whatever. It's a day later. So I think we're probably going to see Kuemper. And, yeah, it's not ideal. When a guy plays like that, and again, right now they're showing – here on the screen behind you, they're showing Arvidsson's goal. Again, that's Arvidsson's spot, terrific blast, but that's another one, too, that you're like, Kuemper, man, we need you to stop that one. It's not ideal. Then you also have Nick Schmaltz not being there. Obviously, worked out for the Coyotes in game one. You don't figure he'll be right back out there today. I mean, it's possible, but probably not.
I doubt it, yeah.
So things are stacking against them a little bit. But I would assume we're going to see both goalies that we've seen in the back to back. So could that mean like a 6-5 kind of game?
Is it maybe?
I don't know.
We'll see. Be very interesting afternoon hockey if that's the case. When we come back, the Preds adjusted well after game one. What sort of adjustments do we think the Coyotes make heading into game three? We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
But, you know, I think the first thing is we talked a lot about to our team about mental toughness, focus, and really, you know, taking the lessons out of the last game of what are some things we need to do really well. that really suits our team. And that was what we discussed, you know, on the off day and the recap of that game. And, you know, I just thought the focus level for us was good. And the things that we talked about, the players really executed, and you know, our competitive level and commitment level in certain areas was better than it was in game one. So we need to make sure we continue that going into game three.
That was Predators head coach John Hines after the game yesterday, talking about some of the adjustments they made moving from game one to game two. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And Joe, I thought the Predators did a really good job yesterday, for the most part, adjusting from some of the mistakes they made in game one. After the first period, like you said, I mean, we just saw the stats on the screen. I think the shot attempts, 29-10. In the first period in favor of Arizona. That doesn't always tell you everything you need to know, but that is a pretty good indication of who's got the puck.
And 14-5 on goal, so basically cut it in half for both sides. So
exactly. Yeah. So I look at what happened in the second and third periods, and the Predators, number one, had the puck a lot more, but number two, when they didn't, defended really well. I thought they did a good job of keeping Arizona to the outside. They didn't give them a whole lot in terms of quality looks in the second and third. And I think when you just kind of look at the game plan, that second and third period defensively is exactly what you have to do. They keyed in heavily on Taylor Hall, Phil Kessel, kept those guys to the outside, and then you got to make somebody else beat you. Like, I thought they adjusted really well. Now the question is, what does Arizona do in game three to counteract that? Do they leave the lineup the same? Are you going to get Nick Schmaltz back? I kind of doubt that. What adjustments can they make to free up Hall and Kessel more? Because let's be honest, those are the two guys, if you're the Predators, you really got to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could split them up. I mean, they obviously putting them together worked out in game one. Maybe you split them up, try to have a little more balance in your lines, not make it so easy for the Predators to know, you know, when they need to be thinking a certain way versus every other line being on the ice. I mean, other than, you know, the one time when the defense sort of broke down was – it was actually Bonino's line.
Yep.
And I mean, that forecheck was all over him and finally resulted in some grade A point blank. And you know, Saros stepped up and then it becomes 2-0. But yeah, the second and third, it felt also like, of course, Arizona's chasing the game. And so the Predators also took advantage of that and they end up really getting a lot of good chances of their own. Taking advantage a little bit maybe of their desperation. But I don't know what Arizona can do other than that, other than switch up those lines and try to see if you can get both those guys free. I mean, Keller has been a factor in this series. Yep. You know, he's certainly a guy. Dvorak is a guy who, you know, can do some stuff for you. But I would not be surprised. And I do think that Tockett would probably change goalies if he could right now. I mean, that's a big potential adjustment that looks like it may not be available for him.
Let's go to Bob, who wants to weigh in on the Predators. Bob, thanks for calling into ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I have two questions. First of all, what do you think is the key to today's game? And secondly, how do you feel like the Duchesne line has been playing? I thought that they showed a little bit of life yesterday, but they really need to, I think, step up, and we need some scoring from that line too. But I'd like to know your thoughts.
Hey, thanks for the call, Bob. Appreciate it. I agree. Like, I thought the Duchesne line took a positive step yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think they were very good at all in game one. I thought 5-on-5 yesterday they were much better. I mean, Turris hit the post. He had another chance in the third period right from the slot. Duchesne had a kind of a rush by himself where he went 1-on-3. He just about pulled it off. I mean, he got around all three, but by the end of it, he just didn't have enough left, you know, in the tank to finish off that move and get the shot away. I thought they looked good. I'm still kind of looking for another level from Granlund. But all in all, I thought that line took a step yesterday. But Bob's right from the sense of it's nice to take steps. You gotta start putting the puck in the back of the net. Like, that's what we've been waiting for from a second line around here in the playoffs for a long time. Like, think back to the Winnipeg series. I mean, that Johansson line was still pretty good in that series. Turris' line couldn't do anything. I mean, Fiala was in and out of the lineup. He was getting scratched.
Two goals last night, by the way. Two more goals for Fiala.
He's got three in the first two games. He just lighting it up. You know, Turris didn't do anything in that series. You think back to last year against Dallas. Nobody did anything really other than Rocco Grimaldi. They need a second line, which is really the reason they went out and got Matt Duchene to begin with. They need a second line not only to be a threat in the postseason, they need a second line to produce in the postseason. That's gotta start happening soon.
Yeah, I feel like Turris has been the most consistently active and threatening of those guys. But, yeah, the Duchene play yesterday, that would have been the highlight of the game. One more, you know, just little move to finish that thing, and that was like, oh, okay, there's the guy. They need more of that. I agree, Granlund's a guy who right now you want to see more from. As far as the first question there, the key to today, what is the one key to today? I don't know.
Well, I think it could be that. I mean, it could be that.
Get them?
I like what I'm seeing from Johansson's line. I still don't think they're at their top level. Like yesterday, I thought they were good. Forsberg, I think, had six shots on goal. Johansson and Arvidsson both score. Forsberg obviously had two in the first game, albeit on the power play. So I like what I'm seeing from that line. Key to today may just be that Duchene line burying a couple. Because if you do that, you got to feel good. Look, let's look at Arizona's roster. Even if they get Nick Schmaltz back, their biggest weakness as a team by far is down the middle. That center ice position, they just don't stack up with the Predators. They've got good players. They've got some guys that can play, but nobody you're really scared of offensively. Like, Arizona doesn't have anybody like Ryan Johansson. Arizona doesn't have anybody like Matt Duchene down the middle. That's got to be something that the Preds take advantage of. They've done it at times in this series. I thought Johansson actually played pretty well yesterday.
I did too.
I thought he was really good. Duchene's got to be that guy, whether it's Duchene, Turris, whatever, because they kind of rotated yesterday. Duchene was down the middle at times. Turris was down the middle at times. One of those guys have got to take advantage of it and start putting the puck in the back of the net. So maybe that's the key to the game today. Look, I think everything we've talked about, you know, transitioning from game one to game two, you've got to continue to do that. I mean, you've got to continue to protect your house in front of the net. You've got to continue to drive toward the net offensively. Those were the two biggest things heading into game two. You still have to do that. I think the next step is getting that second line to be productive.
Yeah. If I had to pick one thing, I would say Taylor Hall, Phil Kessel, especially Taylor Hall. Just look, just do not let them breathe, you know? I mean, if you are attentive and communicative – that's a big word for me at this point
that's
in the morning.
Nice.
And just on your P's and Q's when those guys are on the ice, then I think it takes fluky stuff for them to beat you. So just keep playing the defense that you played for 2.5 periods of yesterday, and I think that you're going to get enough production from somebody to win the game.
And now it's the same question now that we asked. I mean, God, how many times did we ask this question in the regular season? It's a great performance in game two. Now, can you build on it? Like, can you continue to move forward with it? Largely in the regular season, no was the answer to that question. That can't be the case here. And that's kind of what I was talking about the other day when I was saying, you know, I'm done making excuses for these players. This is a situation that I'm talking about. You've got to continue to move forward with what you're doing. Now, I'm not saying you got to come out today and instead of winning 4-2, you've got to win 5-1 or 6-0 or something like that. That's not what I mean. I think you've got to continue to do and build on the things you're doing well and move forward in areas that you're not and improve as you go throughout the playoffs, because that's what happens. That's what it takes to win the Stanley Cup. Teams that win the Stanley Cup, they get better as they go on and move on throughout the playoffs. Can the Predators do that? That's been a question we've been asking all year. The answer largely has been no. Is it different now coming out of the pause?
Yeah, you got to get on a roll. You have to. And listen, if you're playing the very next day, there can't be a better situation to take momentum from one game to the next. Like, get right back out. Now, I'm sure Arizona's like, glad we don't have to sit on this and stew on it for a day. Get us right back out there. But you are not going anywhere if you can't string together some games like this. So I think that most of the first – I would say, you know, more the majority of the first two games was the kind of hockey they want to play.
Yep.
You have to wipe away some of the stuff. Obviously, that terrible stretch in game one And really, in both first periods is where they've had a little bit of trouble. But once they get it together, it's like, okay, you can see the superiority they have over the Coyotes. So can you now take that into this first period today? And then I think you can really start putting your foot on them a little bit and have a chance to finish this thing Friday.
We've talked a little bit about Nick Bonino's role with this group. We're going to get into that a little bit more next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
My role, I guess, is just try to do whatever the team needs. You know, whether it's killing penalties at times on the power play, scoring goals, blocking shots, making passes, just playing hard defense, you know, being on late game, things I take pride in, and just trying to help the team win. I think we've got so many pieces here that, you know, we've got that high-end offensive talent. We've got great defensemen. We've got everything. So anywhere I can help, you know, plug some holes, that's what I focus on.
Yeah, Nick's been he's been very consistent since I've had the opportunity to coach him since coming here. He's, you know, even when there's nights, you know, sometimes in this league or sometimes in playoff series or what have you, that it's, you know, the games are a grind, and that it kind of goes back to, you know, he does all the things on a nightly basis that don't show up on the score sheet, but they also they're big factors in being someone that can be counted on in key situations, and he does a lot of things that help teams win. And, you know, he's a very well-respected player in the room. He's got great experience, but you watch him play and the commitment level that he plays with, regardless of who we're playing or what night it is or where the team's at and or what he's accomplished as a player, has been, you know, it's contagious. And he's a role model type of player on our team, and the way that he plays is really important.
Nick Bonino with a huge game yesterday in game two for the Preds, scoring a goal, blocking shots, getting after people defensively, doing the things that Nick Bonino does.
I want to say, Munson, I like the Guns N' Roses, so this is something that you're going to be getting into. But I'm also very disappointed that you did not play my question before the Bonino answered. Jared Stillman would not stand for this. Jared Stillman.
Look.
He plays. That's all he cares about is the question.
He only plays the question. He doesn't play the answers.
Look, man. We are on a time restraint, Joe.
That's, you know, I was going to get
cannot
mad.
We cannot play your questions because your questions are so great
that they're
so long because they're so in-depth and thoughtful.
Now, I do have two updates.
Stillman's just goes straight to the point because he just, you know, asks, you know, quick questions.
Don't say that because my wife rips me all the time. It's like sports writers ask that you guys just sit there and talk forever and just ask a quick question and get out of there.
I try to land the plane.
Well, what's sad is, like, later in the show, I probably will play Jared's, like, question to Soros.
Yeah.
So
see,
that's the only good question he had.
I'm glad. Well, hey, Jared, if you're listening, you can record that now and then you can play it over and over to yourself.
I do have two updates for you, though. I mean, on the Zoom call yesterday, you know, we had Joe Rule last week. you're calling you by the correct name.
It is
Joe Rexroad every time.
Congratulations for getting your name back.
Yeah, it's Joe Rexroad. But number two, Rexroad had a little bit of difficulty yesterday in the question we're talking about, unmuting himself.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a pause there, and then started the question. I'm sorry. Sorry.
Yeah. I
technology. Couldn't do
bad.
It.
It's bad. Well, the Titan Zooms, too. It's probably either me or Terry McCormick. It's just constantly, I'm like late. I'm fumbling around because you have to unmute yourself. Actually, the NHL one, they put it on your screen. There's no excuse.
Yeah, they kind of do it for you.
Yeah. But when you do the Titan Zooms, you have to go to your little, you know,
box.
To your little box. And unmute it, and I'm always slow doing it. It's pathetic.
So you're wanting him to play the question, but if he played the whole question that you put out there to Bonino and Johansson.
It was pretty long. It was. Well, and plus, I tried to ask them both, and then Johansson just ignored me.
Yeah, he just sat there.
I'm like, Ryan, can you answer it, please? Talk about Nick
also,
Bonino.
Like, I get why they're doing this, because I guess there's got to be some benefit if you actually make the trip to Edmonton. And sit in the bubble.
Sure.
But like these, hey, we're going to start off with the media from the press box. And you can ask two questions. You can ask two questions. You can ask two questions. Then we'll get to everybody else on Zoom.
Okay.
Well, you asked everything pretty much at that point. Just wrap this up, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's – look, if someone's going there and living in the bubble and
sure,
covering this,
I
don't have a problem with that. I just – as long as they give enough questions. And so far it's been fine. But, I mean, look, like just take this to the fans following their team in the playoffs. And if the Preds go deep, you're going to know – it's just – there's just less stuff. If you have a locker room, you're going to get more – diversity of stories. You're just gonna have different angles and
yeah,
more. And you know, when you have two players and the coach, you know, I mean, that's just gonna be, and it's just in a press conference setting, you're gonna read a lot of the same stuff. So, but that's on us also to be more creative and try to come up with different things.
It is the Zoom call stuff. Look, it's 2020 is a weird year, man. You got to do different things. I get it, but the Zoom call stuff is not good. It's just not good.
Yeah, it's a different kind of year. So, but I'll give these reporters who are going to be, although the bubbles sound kind of nice, but still, you think about doing that for 2 months.
Yeah,
that'd be tough. I mean, after sure, a while, I mean, the free Tim Hortons would get me through a month.
Sure,
I think, but that's a grind. So, hey, let them have the questions first.
I'm cool with it.
As long as Stillman can get in there with his brilliance, then we're going to be all right.
Joe, Nick Bonino, and you wrote a piece on this on The Athletic. I think, look, when we talk about the important players for the Predators, he's never going to be the guy whose name comes up first. It's always going to be, you know, Forsberg and Johansson and Yossi and Ellis, all these different players. Bonino had a great year in the regular season. We talked a lot about – you know, how his line with Grimaldi and Smith was probably their most consistent line all season long. I think yesterday's game, with the goal that he scored, the blocking of the shots that he had, how good he was defensively, just kind of epitomizes everything that Bonino means to this group. I thought he was excellent yesterday.
He was great. And, again, you're right, we don't talk enough about him. Because you focus with this team, and it's been obviously a very frustrating team, you focus on the top six guys largely, sometimes some of the defensemen, and how much they're making, and you know this deal and that deal. You tell me, 4 years, $16.4 million for Bonino in 17. Now, I remember at the time David Poile was talking about, you know, maybe he can be the number two center.
Yeah.
Shortly after that, he made the deal for Turris. He has now made the deal for Duchesne. So Bonino has not been that. He's been a bottom six guy, but such a valuable one. And, you know, 17 goals last season, 18 goals this season, 35 points. And, you know, of course, this is 35 points in 66 games this year. Think about what his line did in 2018 postseason, especially in the Colorado series. I would say that's been a really excellent signing for the Predators for what he's done for you. I mean, I don't know. I guess some people could say $4 million, I'd want a little bit more, I don't know, top six contribution. But I mean, to me, he's such an all-around excellent player, does everything. He does get a little bit of power play time, obviously a huge part of the penalty kill, and both ends of the ice, effective, crafty, and tough. And he is a guy who, to me, epitomizes the kind of toughness that this team needs more of.
Yeah, and like especially this time of year, the way that he plays, I mean, it's the way you have to play. And he's played, I think he's got almost 100 games of playoff experience. Obviously winning two cups with Pittsburgh, you've made some deep runs in your playoff career. I just think when you watch Bonino play, the goals and the type of goals that he has to score, I think there's some guys on the team that could learn from that. Like, I think Forsberg can learn from that. Not that Forsberg, you know, needs a lot of help scoring goals, but just the type of – the way you have to play, being that power-type forward that John Himes keeps talking about with Philip Forsberg, which I think he's done a great job of it through the first two games.
Yes.
I think Bonino and the way that he plays the game is a good kind of a path for some of these other guys to follow because – you know, Bonino, he's got some skill to his game, but he's not going to be the most skilled guy on the ice out there really at any point. Even though if you watched that shot yesterday, you'd probably think he was because that was a perfect shot. But I just think his role on this team is so important. I'd probably like to see him get a little bit more power play time. Like, I like Cale Yarncroke. I don't think he should be on the power play. I'd probably just switch it and put Bonino out there. But Bonino continues to do what he's asked to do, and he's one of the few guys that really from the beginning of the regular season until now has been about as consistent as it gets straight through.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a short list of guys on this team that's done that.
Right. I mean, who are the most consistent players on this team? I would say this year I would probably go with Yosi. You start with Yosi, but do you go Bonino next?
Yeah, probably.
And to your point, I mean, if you want to just look at size, you know, he's 6'1", 196. Not a small guy, but the places he gets, 6'3", 218-pound Ryan Johansson should be getting to those places with more ease. So, you know, Johansson, look at him. And Johansson, again, I think
he's been good
in two games. I still think there's another level for him. I think, you know, with a guy like that, you're going to compare it always to 3 years ago. When, by the way, Bonino went out, cracked his tibia on a Subban shot, and then played 12 more minutes in that game. So if you want to talk about toughness, he's, you know, he kind of epitomizes it.
When we come back, we're going to switch gears, get into a little bit of NFL talk. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.